Welcome to the North East Divide podcast. I'm your host, John Lane. I'm here with Anth, as always, and we're here to talk about the two largest clubs in the North East, Newcastle United and Sunderland. thank you very much again for joining us. My biggest ask of you is please watch the video to the end. And if you like what you see, please press the like button on your YouTube. Would be my big ask. Similarly, on your podcast providers, you can rate us, you can leave comments. We're after your feedback. We have Twitter and Instagram, and we're at Northeast Divide. So we welcome your comments, we welcome your feedback. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. So we will move on. So, Anth, you've got a thrilling 0-0 draw to tell me about.
Dear me. I know you mentioned Whitley Bay earlier. I think we'd struggle against them at this particular moment in time. Oh dear, where to begin or where not to begin? Flat, dull. Oh, no inspiration, no leadership. Devoid of any kind of creativity or any ideas. It was pretty grim. Now, I know we can go back to the injury list. Key players been out, as Newcastle have had for a lot of the season. Truth of the matter is, we haven't got the strength in depth on the bench, and I mentioned Seat last week, who's now unfortunately injured, bless him, and players who would normally not be in the first 11 if our first team didn't have a fully effective first team. And yeah, it was just the stats don't look good. I mean, we had 52% possession. We had 8 shots, 0 on target. QPR had, I think, 5 shots on target.
Yeah,
by all accounts, should have won if it wasn't for Patterson. And I think one of the key moments in the game, which maybe went a little bit unnoticed or not unnoticed, was when we had an opportunity to break and big Louis Hamia broke forward and just sort of ran out of steam a little bit, looked around, slowed the ball down and just killed off that attacking sort of move. And I thought, is that a lack of confidence? Is it a lack of any kind of, I don't know, attacking prowess? It just summed up the entire match. It summed up the entire match. And QPR were very unlucky and, you know, probably deserved to leave with all 3 points. It was just very poor.
I keep saying I don't think you're going to get relegated because I think you've got too many points to go down. But there's 8 games left. Huddersfield are on 39, so you're 9 points clear. I think, I mean, and actually, you're in 12th, right? So you're 10 points clear of it. So, sorry, 10 places clear of it. So I do think you've probably got enough, but it just feels to me like yous have, and I know we talked about this the other week, but it feels like yous have actually written off the season internally. Like, I think when they've made the appointment of Dodds to the end of the season, you just kind of wonder, is it literally, has he basically said, look, just see, you know, make sure training happens, make sure the games happen, pick the team, just see we're through, we'll get through to the next year, and then we'll, you know, we'll kind of decide what we do in the summer. And I mean, I think that no doubt, I think there's probably a permanent manager that they've got lined up. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit, Anth, I don't know, but you know, I just have a feeling that they wouldn't have given it to him until the end of the season unless they thought they would maybe bring in someone like Will Still, who was very strongly linked, and there was a compensation issue there. What's your general feeling now, and really what's gonna be kind of a good kind of outcome from this? Because it's funny, isn't it? You know, only a few weeks ago we were talking about seventh heaven, and you're now 10 points away from seventh. So it has been a pretty steep decline.
We've got some tricky fixtures coming up as well. Very tricky fixtures coming up after the international break. I think on Good Friday, we've got Cardiff City away. Yeah. Bank Holiday Monday, we've got Blackburn at home. Luckily enough, I'm at work both days and I've declined having both days off. That's serious. I'm getting double bubble as well, so it's got to be done, hasn't it? So right. That's how, I wouldn't say disinterested, but the lack of confidence I've got at the moment with my team. Now, with regards to managers being lined up, there's lots of rumours going around at the moment why we didn't have a sort of ready-made replacement when Beale went. Do we want to introduce a new manager before the end of the season? Do we just get by with Dodds, who a lot of supporters are saying is part of the problem? He's been there a few years and he could be part of the problem. I don't know where that comes from, because me, I think he's done a good job and he's been asked to do a job. He's stood in really well. So it's just
when did
a question
he come into the
of
club, Anth?
Do you know what? I don't know the exact statistics.
I mean, you don't need the exact date. Yeah. I was wondering, like, roughly.
I'm not sure. A few years. My wife's just danced past there and I'm like, she's just totally thrown us. Sorry. I mean, he's been with us a while. He's been with us a while, and he's got a decent reputation, and he's an honest bloke. And even he said at the weekend after the game against QPR, you know, he said, you can't fault their endeavour, the hard work that they're putting in, or the effort, which is what all of the supporters really appreciate. But we're just lacking that quality. And I think it is looking like men against boys at present with regards to, I know we got beat off your lot under 21s the other day, 3-2. Evans made a comeback.
I wasn't even going to mention that, Ant, but I'm glad you did.
All right. Okay, then. Evans made a comeback, 33-year-old, apparently scored an absolute blinder. So it's nice to see him back, but we're just missing that experience, like we've said before. We're missing those leadership qualities. The younger players who have got those qualities are unfortunately out at this present moment in time. And yeah, I mean, I just don't know. There's rumours abound, though, that he's willing to sell the club, Dreyfus. These are just rumours, anywhere between bandied around figures of 45 to 75 million. Now, I was a bit like, you know, you hear these stories, you know, they gather pace, the rumours. But then there was an interesting development today, an announcement with regards to investment in the club over the next couple of seasons, with regards to the fact we're going to be investing millions in new safe standing, which we discussed the other week, St. James's Park, a new PA system, new floodlights, new playing surface, a 5G-enabled stadium. So there's all of these announcements, and I'm thinking, is he investing for the future as him at the helm as owner of the club, or is he investing it so he can make it an attractive proposition to sell? So there's a few murmurs on and off the pitch at the moment.
It's interesting. And I think, yous have had more runners and hot dinners in the last, like, 5 years, haven't you, really? You think about the last 10 years, I should say. But I think, if they're going to put money in, that's the thing you want them to put money into. If you're going to make it more, do you know what I mean? If they invest in the infrastructure, that's got to only be a positive thing. And, you know, I think it says a lot about PIF that when they came in and, you know, they looked around what was basically a shed of a training ground that we had, and, you know, like players having ice baths and wheelie bins and whatever, and they put the money in. You laugh at the photographic evidence of that.
Old school, yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like there's this great picture. Say great, like it was a horrendous time to be a fan. Of this like kids paddling pool and like loads of players sat in it, like having an ice bath. And I'm like thinking, you know. And then you sometimes on Sky you'll see, like, you know, I think Tony Bellew like did this piece at the Everton training ground because he used to do all his training there, and they've got like this hydro. You know, this hydro center with all these different pools and stuff, and you just think, like, that's how far behind we were. But it's okay because the training ground was adequate. But this is the point: they came in, they realized the facilities weren't where they needed to be. The pumped, you know, I think it was like 12 or 14 million into the training ground that we've got currently. But that's a plaster, really. Like, that will, in time, we'll end up with something like the Etihad campus, I would imagine. I think that's probably the kind of thing that will want to do. But yeah, if they're planning to put stuff into the stadium and whatever else, I don't even think that necessarily suggests that he's going to sell. But if he did, you're right, it would make you worth more, and that's not a bad thing, because it's not as if he's kind of, I don't know, putting like gaffer tape over stuff to make it look more attractive. I mean, that's good investment. It's got to be, hasn't it? And, you know, safe standing, that'll enhance the atmosphere, I think, you know. And with the greatest respect, I think the way they work the safe standing now, when they put it into grounds, is you've got to have a season ticket to be in that section. So the idea is that they need to know who's in the safe standing roughly, so they can police it if they need to, and what have you. I think it's just that's kind of some of the things that they've put in place. So actually, if you move all your noisy season ticket holders to one area where they can make a lot of noise, that will enhance what you've got. And I think we've seen a little bit of that at St James's with Strawberry Corner. I think it's made a difference. There's lots of calls from different angles. People want more safe standing. There's talk about, do you do that in the Leasers Corner? So it's opposite the Strawberry Corner. So you've got noise at both ends of the ground. There's talk of, do you actually just try and do as much of the Gallagher as you can? But you also need to work out, have you got the demand? So have you got enough fans that want to sing, want to stand and make that noise? Have you got enough that are committed to wanting to do that? But also, how many of those seats do you want to restrict to just season ticket holders only? Because we all know that, certainly at our level, probably not as much as your level, I think you could do with as many season ticket holders as you get. But at our level at the minute, because of where the demand is, every season ticket you put in place restricts your revenue, because you can turn that into a travel package and whatever else.
At the moment, there's lots of things being spoken about off the pitch, and one of them was with regards to our attendance on Saturday. I think the official attendance was 41,478, but
overtime at Nissan again.
Well, there you go. Yes, lots of child support, Lord, I suppose. I don't know, whatever. But yeah, double time, treble time. So apparently, though, there was lots of seats empty. There was lots of punters didn't turn up. Is it a case that they've just lost interest? It's just, you know, fizzled out to a certain extent. You know, lots of murmurings with regards to that. So yeah, I think the safe standings. They're on about introducing it to the Roker end, as it's been named after, obviously, Roker Park. And I think that can only be a good thing, because the atmosphere there is normally fantastic.
Which look, stands that, Anth? Just so look, I've got...
It's the Roker. That's what it's called now, the Roker end. As such.
So if I'm watching on telly, is that the one on the right? Or...
Depends where the camera angle. It's the one, trying to think.
Cheers, mate.
I'm trying to work it out now. It's where you've got it's the corner, the right-hand corner, if you're watching it on that. You'll not see it because it's
all right, okay. I was just making sure you weren't converting our stand into safe standing. I just wanted to make sure.
No. So it's like, so I think that can only be a good thing, because normally it's just full of young lads and sort of young'uns, like, get boisterous, you know. So, and it can only add to the atmosphere, because at times it does get a little bit flat. So yeah, I think it's a good thing.
And we, so... It's funny, Mike Ashley did that. So he like was, well, actually, I say that, that's bollocks, right? So I'll start again. So a group of fans decided that they wanted to basically make noise and atmosphere. And initially, they all decided they were going to situate themselves in the top corner of basically right level 7, right next to the away fans. So they put themselves up there because we weren't selling those seats, really. They were empty most of the time. And then lots of people managed to group together. And then in time, the club worked with a group of fans and they ended up at the back of the Gallagher. And again, it was another singing section. And then when Benitez left, and like, you know, a lot of fans left when Benitez left, because, you know, Steve Bruce came in and we all know how that ended up. That the fans that stayed ended up moving to the Strawberry Corner. So that's kind of how we ended up with that safe standing area. But it wasn't driven by Mike Ashley. And actually, there was a point where, you know, that group of fans were pretty much singing, "You fat cockney bastard, get out of our club," on a regular basis. So he basically put an end to that. Probably when he put the family enclosure in, which is, you know, the family enclosure continues to be excellent value. And I know that as somebody who shares a season ticket in that area, that, you know, really, for the standard of football that we're seeing. And actually, I'm quite lucky that we're not too high. So actually, our seat's pretty good there. But I'm going to move on, and I'm going to talk about the FA Cup for the last time this season. And you'll be really happy to know. Well, certainly this game anyway. We went to the Etihad. We were live on BBC One on Saturday night. And stumbled out with the cup with a bit of a whimper, really. Did you watch the game?
I watched the second half, and Man City possession-based football, which they're famous for, they were sort of toying with you as went there at certain stages and towards the end, etc. But I'll give credit where credit's due. Your away support were very vocal and you could hear them. I mean, the noise they made was absolutely superb. The backing that they gave your players was superb. It's just a shame for yourself anyway, that it didn't lift them enough on the pitch to put in a performance worthy of a win, because Man City are just different class, aren't they? So, yeah.
They are. And look, I've done a couple of podcasts on this, and, you know, they dominated us. They absolutely dominated us. I think their goals were quite fortunate. You know, we went with, it's the first time Eddie Howe played a back five since he started managing us, in terms of starting with a back five anyway. So it was nice to see him try something a bit different. And he said that after the game, he said, actually, you know, we knew we wanted to try something different coming here. We kind of looked at the game in isolation about what's the most effective way. Now, there's been a bit of criticism for guess who, Dan Burn, because both goals came from his side. But I mean, for me, I think, look, if you try and just defend against a team, you're going to concede goals, right? But Isak had two really good opportunities. The first one, you know, if he gets a better connection on it, or, you know, usually, to be honest, if the ball lands at your feet in the box, any player that you'd want it to be is Alexander Isak, because he's got, like, I swear, ice cold blood running through those veins of his. Ortega makes a good save, but, you know, you need to score that if you're going to get anything out of the game. And then later on, he's through and it's just, you know, he just doesn't quite get the control. And it feels a bit like, so I was in the away end at Man City at the start of the season. And that day, I think they were clearly a cut above. I mean, they won the game fairly comfortably. It was only 1-0, but they won the game fairly comfortably. And we had kind of like half opportunities and chances, but we just couldn't quite make it work. And I think Man City's a team that, because of the way that they play and they keep the ball, as you say, which is tiring if you're trying to play against that. So then when you do get that opportunity, the pressure's ramped up even more. You know you have to take it there and then. So I think it plays in your head. I think, you know, that then depends on kind of what your body does from there. But it was sad to go out, but I think we approached the game the right way. And I think the most frustrating bit of all of this is if we'd got through that impossible tie, I think we had a really good chance of winning the cup. Yep. Because you've got Coventry, who, you know, did amazing at Wolves, but let's be honest, they're a championship side. You've got Chelsea, who are not the same Chelsea side that, you know, they've been over the last 10, 12 years or what have you. And then you've got Man United, who, yes, they're getting results, but I still maintain that they're shit. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think we'd have had a real chance, but, you know, the only way we're beating Man City in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup is at St James's Park. Like, we needed the draw to go our way, and it didn't. So from there, it was trying to work out, right, what can we do to get any chance? But you know, I'm not going to call out the performance of the players. I think you know, it was always going to be a challenging game. And I think the other side of it, as you say, that the supporters and lots of people. So the podcast we did the other night. Last night, I should say, the other three lads were all in the ground, and they basically said, like, they didn't hear any. No one was getting on the backs of the players. Everybody was getting behind the side. It was a really positive away end from that point of view. They really supported the team. And what they said, though, was the home atmosphere was absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
And they've said, if that's going to be the price of success at Newcastle United, at St James's Park, it's really scary. Like, that's just, it's not what they'd want it to be. So it's kind of like, how do you make sure you maintain that? Yes, you need to get money in. You need an element of international fans or tourists or what have you. You need an element of that, but it's how do you get the balance of that right? So you're still, yes, increasing your revenue, but you don't lose that atmosphere, which is so unique and so important. And if we end up moving away from St James's, which obviously we talked about last week, how do you create a stadium where you maintain that? Because ultimately, what's the big thing that pulls people to want to watch Newcastle United? You know, that it's surely it's that.
Mm-hmm. Do you know as well, I look at the likes of Man City and I look at the state of the art ground and all, obviously the facilities and what have you. But do you really want to be, as a player, gawped at while you're in the tunnel by supporters because they've got that? I just don't understand that. It's like being in a fish tank, man, isn't it? Do you really want that? And if that's the match day experience they want to create, where it's, you know, it's immersive as such and you get to see the players and almost touch them and you're part of it, yeah. But then, I don't know.
I mean, in fairness, it's a mirror on the player's side. So it's not as if like they can see these people like with a face pushed against the glass, like banging on the window.
I just find it all a little bit weird. It's like, you know, I think there should be, just get to your seat, sit down, soak up the atmosphere, and once they come on, cheer them on as best you can. You know, so I don't know. I mean, Arsenal were accused of that a few seasons ago with regards to the atmosphere at their place. And now it's pretty much changed dramatically, obviously pushing for the Premiership title. So, but with Man City, maybe they're just becoming, I don't know, the support base is becoming a little bit, well, don't know, blasé, a bit used to it, a bit sort of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, but atmosphere wasn't great, like.
I think there's two points I want to make on this. First of all, the point about Man City. When there's little to no jeopardy every time you turn up to that stadium, like, that must change kind of your perspective, because they were expected to win against us. Like, mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that, right? But you haven't got that nervous energy, everyone's just like, oh, it's all right, we're going to win. Mm-hmm. Fine, we're going to win. And to the point where there's such a relentless winning machine, it's never a surprise. So that's kind of, that almost ruins the experience. Like, don't get us wrong. Like, I didn't like being in a relegation battle. But, you know, you turn up and you want a performance out of your team and you want them to try your best. But if you just turn up and you know that, like, there's a 95% chance that you're going to win every week, I mean, that takes a bit of the fun out of it, I think. No, don't get me wrong. Like, we all want to see our team win. But you can understand how exciting must that be for a season ticket holder? You turn up every week, you know, you're probably going to win, probably score a few goals. Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll cheer, whatever. and then it's a bad season if you don't win the league. If you do lose, it's like hell on earth. It's like the worst thing that's happened in the world. If you draw, Jesus, like how are you going to cope? Because, you know, you might not get enough points to win the league, and you have to win the league because you've got to that stage. And I think that for me is the bit where it's like, where's the enjoyment? Like, the enjoyment's when you get the trophy at the very end of the season, but all the bits up to that are just like, well, we'll have to win. Like we will win. And there's no, as I say, there's very little jeopardy, I suppose. And
yeah,
it's an interesting argument, I suppose, on that. So there's other news on Tyneside, which has been released over the last couple of days. So Newcastle United are travelling to Melbourne after the season finishes. So about 3 days, I think we play on the Wednesday and the Friday. So we play on Wednesday at the MCG, and then we play on the Friday at, I think it's called the Marvel Arena or the Marvel Stadium or something. Basically, it's like a multi-purpose. I think they play like Aussie rules there and cricket and God knows what else. They play sport. But anyway, we play Spurs on the Wednesday night on the MCG in a friendly, which has been billed as a bit of a Postecoglou homecoming. And then we play the A-League All-Stars, I think, on the Friday. If you're a player, right, thinking, you know, you haven't got the FA Cup final, you're a bit disappointed, and then within 24 hours of going out with the FA Cup, it's like, oh, by the way, lads, like, when the season finishes, when you're meant to finish your season, go home, we're going to take you, 20-odd hours, like, flight over across the world to go and play a couple of friendlies. How do you feel? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
In a long, hard season where we've had our biggest injury crisis ever, and we all know what the answer is to this, right? But it just baffles us that someone has thought, yeah, that's a good idea.
Do you know what? No, it's not, is it really? When you, like you say, you've had a long, hard season. You've been involved in the cup until, you know, not until this, well, nearly the semi-finals.
We've got the quarterfinals of both cups.
Not quite the semi-finals, though, eh? But never mind.
What round did you score out in? I forget.
So you've been involved, yeah, okay, you win. So you've been involved, and it's a long, hard season, and, you know, the Premiership, the pace of the Premiership takes it out, yeah. You know, I mean, we've got a lot of games in the Championship, and that takes a lot of out of our players, but the Premiership's different pace, it's different quality. So, yeah, now some people might say, oh, Australia, yeah, that'd be fantastic, that, but it's a hell of a long journey, a hell of a long flight, and then, obviously, no disrespect, Tottenham, yeah, obviously, that'll be a good opposition and what have you, but an all-star team of whom exactly? Who are these all-stars? I reckon
that whoever's on Celebrity Big Brother is more famous than these all-stars. It's mad, absolutely mad. What I found quite funny, one of a very prominent Newcastle YouTubers tweeted out that he's got tickets and he's booked everything to go to Australia. I just want to say for the record, this YouTube channel doesn't make money at the minute, so I won't be booking flights to Australia based off of the success of this YouTube channel. Yeah. If so, I think Anth would kill us. I think it might be. Do you know what it is? For some fans have never missed a game. They'll watch every game and every friendly, and it's a bloody long way to go. But you know, there will be some people that will make that trip. And fair play to them, because that really is loyalty to your club. Mm. But it just seems odd timing. I mean, look, elephant in the room, it's all about the money, it's all about the exposure, it's trying to attract new interest in the club to generate more fans, more support, more merchandise, more money. Like, that's what it comes down to. But, you know, pre-season, I don't have a massive issue with it. Post-season, I think... Look, you know, like, there's lads there that need rest and they need surgery, some of them, potentially. So, you know, what I'm hoping is that, I mean, I'm sure the club will do that. You know, I think once the season's done, anyone who needs surgery will go and get surgery. But I think some of these lads need a bit of a rest as well. And, you know, part of me hopes that, you know, it's predominantly like our under 23s and stuff. You know, or are they going to stretch Bruno out before he goes on his release clause? You know, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. Right, so we're going into the international break. Do you know if Sunderland have got anything planned in terms of what they're doing in terms of their training regime? Or
absolutely nothing. I know we've had two international call-ups. Trey Hume's gone to Northern Ireland. I think Ballard's involved. I don't know if he's going to be fully fit, but he's going to be involved in the squad in some capacity. So two call-ups there. Two young lads, Chris Rigg, and the other one who I've never really heard much about, Matty Young, have been called up for England under-18s. Other than that, nothing. I think they're just going to focus on training sort of at base camp. So, yeah, nothing mentioned. They have mentioned pre-season. I know you want about sort of post-season this season, then pre-season. Two games in Spain, Costa Blanca, Alicante, somewhere, opposition yet to be named. So not as far afield or as glamorous as Australia. But I think it's going to be just hopefully get a few players back from injury. I know Jack Clark and Patrick Roberts were on the sidelines watching us our defeat against Newcastle under-21s and supporting the lads. So I know Clark's going to be out for a few more weeks, but it'd be nice to see some players be brought back into the fold. I know Bradley Dack's almost fully fit, and he's been on the bench. So we'll just hopefully they're going to focus on just getting players back so we can at least turn in a half-decent performance before the end of the season.
I think you need just a little bit of momentum, don't you, just to keep... a lot of the fan base and get now. To be fair, I know I keep taking the piss about your attendance, right? But 41,000 fans in the Championship when you essentially don't have anything to play for the rest of the season, like fair play. Like the club's not it's better run than it has been at times in the last kind of 10-15 years. Not perfect. You know, there's a lot of criticism for not just the owner, but the sporting director. And I think a lot of people are laying the blame at his door for the Michael Beale project and whatever else. And, you know, probably Black Cat Bar, you know, gate and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I think that says a lot. You know, there's still a lot of fans that are very loyal. And, you know, it was only, what, 4 or 5 years ago that Newcastle United had to give out 10,000 free season tickets because that many fans had lost interest in the Premier League at a point where we were incredibly mediocre and were pretty much battling relegation every season. And so, and that was the final straw for a lot of fans. I think a lot of fans walked away in 2008. When Keegan went, I think that was a trigger for a lot of people. But, you know, there was also a lot who then went, and it was almost like that was the final straw for them when Rafa wasn't backed and Steve Bruce came in. So the fact that you're still attracting that amount of fans, the club really owe it to them to try and do something and try and do something to turn it around. So, you know, I get it. It must be difficult to not have the apathy set in. When we've said it already, the balance of the squad isn't right. And I think this is the, if you know, I don't think Speakman's going to watch this podcast, but if he was watching this podcast, the advice I'd give him, fair enough, it's coming from a Newcastle and rather than a Sunderland then that wanting to succeed. But the advice I'd give him is, you know, yes, have principles of your what's it called? What's it keep getting referred to? The
model.
The model. That's it. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Have your principles of the model, but don't be afraid at times to stray away. There was
exactly.
A guy. There was one of your fans rang in and spoke on Radio Newcastle the other night, and he basically said that. He said, "Look, like I understand that the club need to, you know, be financially solvent. I get that, but you can't just buy kids." And just have kids, you need some experience in there. The Alan Hansen very famous 95 quote,
yeah,
"You'll win nothing with kids." That wasn't based on 11, you know, 20 something year olds, because he did have experience in there. You had the likes of Steve Bruce in that defence. You had Roy Keane in the middle of that midfield. You know, you had other senior pros there, Pallister. Schmeichel, you know, they're all big seniors, Cantona. The problem is, at the minute, is, you know, what, 8, 9, 10 players of yours are young players and they're still learning and they need some experience around them. So I think that's, for me, that's what I would do. But I'm not your sporting director and I don't pay the wages and I don't pay for transfer fees and all of that.
So. Well, apparently his contract's up at the end of the season. That's why all these rumours are gathering pace now. Just the timing of things. They've also today announced the new season ticket price structures. And they've I'm not too sure about the advertising campaign. They've classed it as a way of life. Now, some of the comments I've seen underneath this new advertising campaign and what have you haven't been very complimentary. They've been pretty derogatory, and there's some of the comments I've actually just laughed out loud because they are pretty funny. So yeah, he needs to have a bit of giving with regards to the model as it is. I think there needs to be flexibility, like you say, because on Saturday it looked like an under 21 match. It was God bless the younger players and what have you, but they just look devoid of ideas. So, and another thing to fuel the rumour mill with regards to Kirill Lewis-Dreyfus selling the club is the fact that him and his wife, Alexandra, have welcomed a new baby into the world. So congratulations to them. So there's all of this thrown into the mixing pot and the baking a cake and burning it at the moment because it's just the rumours are on fire. So, yeah.
You know, I saw that and I thought that was like the way that had been framed by a fan. I just thought it was a bit shit, if I'm quite honest. Like, he's had a kid. Yeah. Like, he's celebrating the birth of his kid, right?
Yeah.
That's not being put out to deflect from the fact that he's getting shit from the fan base.
Yeah.
Like, he's celebrating the birth of his child. And we had a bit of that, like, crap social media where, like, Joe Linton had posted a picture of him and his wife or him and his bed or whatever, and it was just like, when are you going to start scoring goals? And
oh,
it's like,
God, oh.
Piss off. Like these players have got lives. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
like,
exactly.
And this is a thing. So, like, look, you know, obviously, congratulations if you're watching Kirill.
Yeah, exactly.
Your child. Never remember your surname. But, that whole idea that somebody, right, he's decided to put this tweet out.
Yeah,
in order to, or this Instagram post out in order to take pressure, fuck off, like a load of bollocks, like honestly, ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
there was one more thing I was going to talk about, very, very quickly. Yeah, so right, here's one, right? So, we did a lot of when we were doing, I was doing podcasts on my other project that I do work for, there was a lot of talk. The thing we kept saying was fuck the league. Now we can't do that anymore because that's the only thing that we're in now. But we're 4 points off seventh with 10 games to go. We're gonna have an interesting bit of fixture congestion because Palace had to get moved because we were in the FA Cup quarterfinal, and because Man United are in the FA Cup semi-final, that game is also going to be moved as well. So we're going to have a couple of free kind of weekends, but we're going to have a couple of midweeks where we're going to have to play those games both away at Palace and at Old Trafford. Looking from the outside, like, is our season over?
When you put it like that and you say it with regards to where he's on the table and the difference between that and being further up the table, I would say no. I would say there's everything to play for, to be perfectly honest with you. And, you know, as a player, seeing that, I would be motivated. And like you say, focus on the league now. You're out of the cup. You're out of the cup, aren't you? So, yeah, you're out of the cup. Focus on the...
We are out of the cup, but what I can't remember is when you went out of the cup. I keep forgetting.
Anyway, we don't want to get distracted by silverware. Focus on the league, says Mayu, 12th place. Anyway, but no, I think there's everything to play for, and go for it. Because who knows? The running towards the end of the season always throws up some very strange results, as does the start of every season. Some bizarre opening day fixture results in the past, and the same can happen towards the end of the season. So everything to play for your lot.
Yeah, I agree, and I think look. If we look at kind of the teams we've got left to play, I think we've got our hardest game probably is away at Old Trafford. And I keep telling you the shit. We've beaten them 3-0 already this season at their place. So I'm not saying we'd do that again. But, you know, that I don't necessarily rate them as a particularly strong side, as I keep making abundantly clear. I think the point is that we do need a win, and we need a good win, and we need to almost start building that momentum. I think the break's coming at the right time for us. The team are away to Dubai for the fortnight, and I think that'll really help. So the players who obviously aren't on international duty, that's really going to help them. Anthony Gordon's away with the England squad, so that'll be good for him as well. I think Bruno looked a bit better when he came back off Brazil international duty as well. So look, we'll see. I think there's a lot of rest needed, and I think we need to look at the squad and see who we can play. Harvey Barnes should be back for West Ham, the reckon, as should Kieran Trippier. So hopefully they don't turn into like long-term injuries. And Tino was missing on Saturday. He had a bit of a knock, but if Trippier's back in, it'll be interesting to see whether he makes his way back on the squad. But the season's still there. There's still something to play for. And I think, you know, I've said it before, we've had years and years where we've got to the stage of the season and either we're fighting relegation or we've got nothing to play for. So, you know, I will take being 4 points off Europe with 10 games to play. And if you put a run together, you never know. I think we are, 16 points off top four. So for me, that ship is well and truly sailed. Even 13 points off fifth, if we get the extra coefficient place for England, but we'll see. We are going to leave it there, though. And so thank you so much again for your time. Everybody who's watched or listened, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you've enjoyed it. Remember to press like if you've liked it. you don't like it, leave a comment. Tell us why. Let us know on Instagram or Twitter or YouTube or your podcast provider. We'll get all those comments in and we will take any feedback on. We just want to make this show as good as we can do. So, yeah, thank you very much. And next week we are going to do a show. We haven't decided what we're going to do it on yet. So that'll be a bit of a mystery for all of us until then, probably. But thank you again for watching and goodbye.